The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My beginning had been as a poet and as a fiction writer. So at some point, I went deeper into that calling and I ended up writing a book called Take Wing and Fly Here, a novel that's set in the world of birding. And that came out and there was a great response. And meanwhile, my life as a naturalist was deepening and I was feeling that I hadn't really told a story of how I fell in love with birds. And I started to write these essays addressing that. And I think by this point, I really felt like a multilingual artist because I had been working in film and I had been working in fiction and I had been doing literary criticism. And so it didn't feel like a far stretch to write a nonfiction book. What it felt like is storytelling is storytelling. And if you learn the language of a medium, whether it's film or fiction or nonfiction, there is a story that lends itself better to one particular medium. And I felt like it was kind of exciting in a way to be working in all these different mediums.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. This is your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you patience, and perseverance per usual. Award-winning author and filmmaker Priyanka Kumar spoke to me about the language of cinema, her Zen leanings, returning to the solace of nature, and her latest conversations with birds. Priyanka is a graduate of the University of Southern California School of Cinematic Arts and an alumna of the Breadloaf Writers Conference. She is also the award-winning writer, director, and producer of the feature documentary, The Song of the Little Road, starring Martin Scorsese and Ravi Shankar. Her latest is Conversations with Birds, a Publisher's Weekly Top 10 Nonfiction Book for Fall 2022, a Bookshop.org Read Outside the Big Five selection, and an Apple November Best Books of the Month, and has been described in a Kirkus-starred review as an eloquent depiction of how birding engenders a deep love of our ecosystems and a more profound understanding of ourselves. Priyanka's debut novel, Take Wing and Fly Here, was published in 2013 to critical acclaim, and her essays and criticism have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, the LA Review of Books, and many others. In this file, Priyanka and I discussed how to find the perfect cover art, growing up in the most biodiverse part of the world, why we face unprecedented distraction, the importance of bird song, how technology rewires our creative spirit, why you need to replace your insipid lawn, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. Okay, we are back on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by award-winning filmmaker and author Priyanka Kumar is joining us. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today.
Thank you, Kelton.
I can't wait to pick your brain about all things writing and, of course, this lauded new book of yours. And yeah, but as we do with so many authors, take us back a little bit and talk some about your superhero origins as a writer, because I understand, you know, that as a filmmaker, you kind of had different plans maybe for your life and career early on. But yeah, talk kind of about your journey to this fantastic book, Conversations with Birds.
Sure. I started writing at a very young age without really thinking about it. I think I was about 10 when I won a poetry competition, and that was the first time I remember being cognizant of the fact that I was writing not just for myself, but for an audience. And so throughout my teenage years, I was writing short stories and essays and, you know, publishing them in newspapers and journals. And still, I didn't think of myself as a writer. You know, I thought I was going to study international relations, which was what I did at the University of Toronto. But the writing really persisted. I found myself writing novels and essays, and it was just something that never went away until people started to read my work and give me some feedback. And at one point, a professor at the University of Toronto asked me if she could use a chapter of a book I had written for an anthology for international literature. And the book wasn't even published yet. And that was the first time I really paused and wondered whether I could really make a life as a writer. And I think that was a transformative moment for me to have an esteemed professor who was teaching Chaucer to come to me and ask if she could use a chapter of my unpublished book for an anthology for a class that she was teaching. And in some ways, that really changed the way I was thinking about this writing I had been doing since the age of, you know, 8 or 9. And I was about 20 at the point when this professor asked me this question. And I thought, well, maybe, just maybe, I could make a life as a writer.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, as a storyteller in different mediums, including documentary filmmaking and fiction. Yeah. I mean, how talk kind of like maybe about the evolution from, you know, I understand that you made an award-winning documentary starring Martin Scorsese and Ravi Shankar, of all people, which, you know, in and of itself seems like kind of a, you know, kind of would have led you down the road to you know, more filmmaking as opposed to, you know, a nonfiction book about kind of your life as a naturalist and kind of reconnecting with nature.
Sure. And again, there was a moment at University of Toronto, I was taking a course in which, for some strange reason, a professor showed us Star Wars, which, you know, having grown up in India, I don't believe I'd seen the film before, and showed it to us on the big screen. And I was really struck and overwhelmed by the power of the imagery and storytelling there. I started to think about that, and I thought, well, film is really the medium for my generation. And so I applied to go to film school and got into the University of Southern California, where I did my master's in film directing. And it was fabulous in a way to become conversant with a new language, the language of filmmaking. And after I graduated, I made a documentary about Satyajit Ray, a filmmaker who won the honorary Oscar for Lifetime Achievement. And his work had greatly moved me. And I felt that his storytelling had a timeless quality that also transcended cultural barriers. And I wondered how he did that. And so I decided to interview people like Scorsese, who was deeply influenced by Ray's work, and also Ravi Shankar, who composed the music for Ray's films. And so I wandered into this, I would say, incredibly exciting world of making documentary films. And that was gratifying in its own way. But I certainly faced barriers as a woman who was perceived as being a foreigner, And I think I was also missing the poetry of prose writing. So, and my beginning had been as a poet and as a fiction writer. So at some point, I went deeper into that calling, and I ended up writing a book called Take Wing and Fly Here, a novel that's set in the world of birding. And that came out, and there was a great response. And meanwhile, my life as a naturalist was deepening, and I was feeling that I hadn't really told a story of how I fell in love with birds. And I started to write these essays addressing that. And I think by this point, I really felt like a multilingual artist, because I had been working in film and I had been working in fiction and I had been doing literary criticism. And so it didn't feel like a far stretch to write a nonfiction book. What it felt like is storytelling is storytelling. And if you learn the language of a medium, whether it's film or fiction or nonfiction, there is a story that lends itself better to one particular medium. And I felt like it was kind of exciting in a way to be working in all these different mediums.
Well, congrats on the work. Of course, Conversations with Birds, really a beautiful cover, I thought. I mean, it was kind of stunning.
Thank you.
How did you feel about the the cover? I mean, it's like, I mean, if I could describe it, it's kind of got like gold
foil.
Gold, yeah, thank foil. You. Yeah. around the edges, it just really pops. I you know, you don't see a lot of covers that are that ornate.
Yeah, and that gold foil was meant to honor the place where I grew up, which is Assam in northeastern India. And that is actually a motif that the cover artist took from some Assamese textiles. And I am so grateful for this cover to Mary Austin Speaker, who's the cover artist. And she began to read the book. And I think she felt that, or the way that she expressed it to me is that she thought that this was a book that was going to be around for a really long time, because it addresses what's going on in the natural world today. And addresses not just biodiversity loss, but also the joy and beauty of encountering birds. And she really wanted to make a cover or design a cover that she felt did justice to what the book was doing. And I was, I have to be honest, I was staggered by the beauty of this cover. And, it really took my breath away early on that this artist had such enthusiasm and faith in my book, and that touched me.
Yeah, that's really, really a great story, actually, because you don't hear a story like that very often about just, you know, something that could be considered so simple, and obviously it's not. These covers that convey a very specific message often, but a unique story, and kind of matches the prose in a way. But congrats on the reception. The reviews have been amazing. Your peers have come out and said some really sweet things. It was named Top 10 Nonfiction Book for Fall 2022 by Publishers Weekly, many others. And Apple named it November's Best Books of the Month. And I'll just read a little blurb here. This isn't just a book about birds. It's a look at the joy and curiosity we feel when we build connections with the natural world. With gorgeously descriptive language, Kumar shares her fascinating discoveries about birds and uses them as a gateway to explore topics like climate change, racism, and spirituality. And you must be feeling pretty good about the reception now that your baby is out in the world.
I am, and thank you for that. And I'm also finding myself going back to some of my Zen roots and focusing on breathing. and really having a slow mind, really being present in this moment and being grateful for this this incredible reception.
Yeah, it's got to feel pretty good. Well, as you mentioned, you've kind of described it as like the poetry of biodiversity, helping to really, as you mentioned, kind of remedy this tech overload that we're all suffering from, I think. You know, as you mentioned, it's a very timely book. I'd love to go back to kind of, obviously, the book itself tells this story about your own relationship with nature and you know, having come from Los Angeles and then found yourself kind of seemingly feeling some isolation in, I think, Santa Cruz, right?
Right.
And spending time in the nature preserves there, which I have done myself. The UCSC campus itself is just like gorgeous and beautiful and kind of really, really green, verdant. And of course, then you've got, as you mentioned, the those nature preserves and the marshes and just so much biodiversity. But yeah, talk a little bit about the genesis of the conversation that you've started here.
Sure. I was fortunate to grow up in an area in India that is considered today to be one of among the top 20 biodiversity hotspots on the planet. And of course, as a child, I just loved every moment of it without knowing how fortunate it was or without knowing that this was quite unusual. And so when I moved, eventually as a teenager, when I moved to Toronto, I experienced the loss of that connection with nature as a profound loss. And it's true what you're saying, Kelton, that later when I was teaching at UC Santa Cruz, the campus is quite verdant. And yet it really nagged me that I couldn't form that deep connection with the natural world that I'd had as a child. And so I really started exploring the periphery of Santa Cruz and the rest of California. And I was hiking and backpacking and trying to find my way back into the natural world, and was a little bit frustrated that I couldn't. And it wasn't until I took an unplanned a bird walk in the Elkhorn Slough, which is about half hour from Santa Cruz, and saw a long-billed curlew, which is a prehistoric-looking bird with a 9-inch bill. And I got lost in the beauty and mystery of that world, of that bird. It wasn't until that moment that I felt that a door cracked open for me to experience the natural world. And I certainly took that opening and went in and fell in love with birds of all stripes and colors and feathers. And it just became something that was so impactful in my life, in my spiritual and artistic life. And eventually, I thought that I might share it with other people. We are living in a time of crisis, not just biodiversity loss, but also mental health crisis, where we're surrounded by unprecedented level of distraction. And I felt that this way of entering nature and looking at birds, perhaps it would open a doorway for other people to go in there, develop a relationship with the natural world, and maybe consciously move away from this tech overload, the device-filled lives that are really taking over at this point. I mean, whether we're grown-ups or kids, it's incredible how little we're actually talking about it. Scientists know that the way we use social media, it's rewiring our brains. And I mean, I wonder what it does to us as human beings, as writers. And so in addition to exploring the beauty of birds and biodiversity loss, this mental health issue is something that I touch upon maybe more obliquely in the book and maybe more directly in the conversations that I'm having now after the book's been released.
It really seems like, you know, I mean, part of the takeaway, as you mentioned, you know, this kind of these concentric circles of crises that we're dealing with, not only from climate change and, of course, this rather fragmented and divisive time in our culture, it is, as you put it, incredibly distracting. And it does feel at times like our brains are wired by our tech overlords to our detriment. Reconnecting, or, you know, at least the idea of reversing environmental damage by, you know, kind of returning to a connection and a joy of, you know, spending time in nature. It really makes sense that, of course, birds are something that probably many of us take for granted. And then, you know, as you had kind of mentioned, like it isn't really just about birding, at least checking off, you know, birds on a checklist. It really is more about kind of understanding this complex world that we live in and our connection to it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think birds really invite us to be there in the landscape. For me, I don't think I was ever attracted to that checklist idea. I really love to be out there and be able to pause and just kind of blend into the landscape so that the birds aren't aware of my presence at some level. And I just like to observe their beauty, but also their behavior. And that's quite gratifying, even seeing something like I was hiking along the Continental Divide Trail and was looking for the Western Tanager, which is one of my favorites, but came upon a family of three-toed woodpeckers, and the parents were there and kind of pecking away like industrious carpenters. And then there was this little chick, and the parents noticed me and immediately signaled to the chick to get back in the nest, which it did. And then the parents went on with their day, like, you know, and I just stood there observing them, but also experiencing the beauty of, you know, some of the old growth trees around me, and really feeling a part of this landscape, which we all are. And we forget that. We become so isolated in the lives that we're living, almost living in cubicles, you know, with all these devices plugged to ourselves almost. And we forget that, you know, we're in a sense, we're part of the animal world, and that world is there for us. And so I felt like there was a fascinating parallel between how our consciousness is so fragmented today because of the way in which we're using and misusing technology. And the natural world is terribly fragmented. And, you know, the birds and other wild animals are suffering because they don't have the whole ecosystems that they need to thrive in. So I felt that there's some connection here, and being conscious of that connection feels terribly important somehow in this moment. And so that's certainly something I wanted to highlight in the book.
Yeah, 100%. I found your message about transforming our ecologically insipid lawns and growing pollinator habitat instead, an important one. But really, if you think about it, I mean, with the amount of drought that we are experiencing, especially in like the Southwest,
right?
I mean, my goodness, like it, that makes more sense to me than anything. It always has. I never understood the amount of like sod and grass in like Las Vegas, Nevada. Like, how is that, you know, how is that possible? Like, what is the point of that? The amount of water required.
I mean, we've been in what scientists are now calling a mega drought in the Southwest since 2000. So it's been over two decades now. Huh. And it's amazing to me sometimes that, you know, that we can just kind of go on living, thinking that the state can, you know, it's obviously not sustainable. But I feel like there's a lot that we can do, even just at a personal level. I like to get my hands in the soil and, you know, grow a lot of drought resistant or xeric plants, like penstemons for hummingbirds. And it's so gratifying to grow these. These are perennials. And you see birds like the Rufous hummingbird, which recently landed on a list of tipping point species. These are species that have lost a significant percentage of populations and, you know, may well move towards the brink of extinction if nothing is done. But I think that we can all play our role. I think that urban habitat can be a game changer. So yeah, instead of these insipid lawns, if we, you know, if we grow flowers like penstemons and many, many other ones. And it's, you know, the perennial sunflowers, for instance, are wonderful food when the seed dries up for goldfinches. It's so gratifying to have these birds when the goldfinches are, you know, I have, you know, hundreds of sunflowers in my garden. And it's gratifying to see the goldfinches now when it's getting cold and, you know, there's not much action in terms of color, but the goldfinches are there nibbling away every day at the sunflower heads. So, and that kind of gets me out of anything that, you know, my everyday life and just experience the lives of these beautiful creatures. So I think it's certainly a gift that these birds are giving us, and it's up to us to honor that gift. And to grow more bird habitat. And the beauty of it can be so transformative that, yeah, those lawns, as they say, kill your lawn.
Yeah. I think it's an important message. And, you know, I could probably pick your brain all day about the content and the message behind the book, but we really didn't get a chance to touch on your kind of your writing process and kind of the process that went into this book. How long would you say that it took you to put together this collection as a whole, or when did you feel like it was completed?
You know, I would say that around maybe 2015 or so, I started to write a couple of the essays that are in this collection. And I know one was published in the Los Angeles Review of Books, and there was some incredible feedback. There was a publisher at Grey Wolf, who told me that this essay I wrote about a bobcat, she couldn't get it out of her head. And and I thought, well, maybe there's something there since she reads a lot. And so she suggested that I connect with a different publisher. And so it wasn't really until, I would say, the summer of 2019 that I started to seriously work on the essays. So it took me a good year and a half to write the 20 essays in this book. And a lot of that happened during the pandemic. And speaking of writing process, I before the pandemic, I liked to, you know, I liked to kind of work at my desk, but also go to a favorite cafe and do a bit of work there. I like the energy of that. And with the pandemic, all that came to a very quick close. And I wondered what that would do to me as a writer, because it was an important part of my routine to go to a certain cafe and work there. And interestingly, I settled in more at my desk. I think I ended up being more more prolific and going deeper into my work. So, and I rarely go to a cafe anymore. It's very strange how the pandemic has changed us. But yeah, I would say it took a good year and a half to write these essays. And then of course, I was done around the very end of 2020. And then there's the process of editing and getting a book out. So yeah, and I find myself in fall of 2022. Seems a little surprising.
Are you working on anything presently? Are you returning to your roots in fiction, or are you working on more nonfiction?
Both. Thank you for asking that. For about the last 5 years, I've been working on a trilogy that's a fiction trilogy that's set in independent India, that tells the story of independent India, post 1947 through to the 1990s. It tells the story of two families whose lives intertwine. And so I'm working on that trilogy. And then on the nonfiction end, I'm working on a book called The Light Between Apple Trees, which has to do with my love of wild fruit trees. And that love also deepened during the pandemic. So I think the pandemic has changed me in significant ways.
Very nice. Well, we will look for those, of course. And quick fun one before we wrap up here with your advice to your fellow scribes. If you could have dinner with any author from any era, who would you take and where would you take them?
Wow. Okay. I think Tolstoy. I hope that doesn't sound like a fusty answer. And I know that he preferred tea to coffee, so I would take him to a place called Chocolate Maven, it's in Santa Fe, which does an excellent high tea. So a high tea and pastries. Did you say dinner?
That sounds perfect.
I think in a pinch they might serve a meal too.
You can have it delivered. We have DoorDash. We can bring you whatever you want.
Yeah, there you go. And I mean, I think because Tolstoy was also working in different mediums, of course, he's known for his fiction, but I have a wonderfully old book of letters that he wrote, which to me just reads like a nonfiction book. So there's a lot of philosophy. He was a philosopher as well. And then, of course, at the end of his life, he in a way disavowed his fiction. He didn't think that it was terribly important or meaningful. And he instead focused on his spiritual life. And so I think there's a lot of interesting tension there. And I would just be sipping tea and having pastries and asking him some hard questions.
Well, to be a fly on the wall for that would be pretty fascinating. I would like to wrap up with your advice to your fellow scribes on just how to persevere during these highly strange times.
I mean, I think I would come back to what I touched on briefly during our conversation, which is to cultivate a slow mind. And I think that's... I say that in the best sense of the term. Someone actually asked Wendell Berry if he ever thought of becoming a lawyer. And they asked him that because his dad was a lawyer and his brother was a lawyer. And he said, no, I didn't. They had really fast minds and they could, think on their feet. And I had a slow mind. And I think you need a slow mind to be a writer, to go into that really contemplative, poetic space. And I feel that everything in this hyper-modern, hyper-connected lives that we live takes us away from that. So I think as writers, we have to fight that tendency to be out there. And instead, we have to go in there and drink some tea and be philosophical and think of ourselves as poets.
I love it. That is a really, really apropos way to wrap up here. I thank you for your words and your wisdom. Of course, I will point at your home base there, PriyankaKumar.com, and the book is Conversations with Birds, described as an eloquent depiction of how birding engenders a deep love of our ecosystems and a more profound understanding of ourselves. That's in a Kirkus-starred review. Congrats on the work. Please come back, rap with us in the future, and we wish you the best of luck moving into the a slower future.
Thank you so much. This was a pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.